You're listening to C101.5 FM, The Hawk, from Mohawk College in Hamilton, Ontario. Hamilton's alternative.
Happy Tuesday, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Sarah Jessica, and this is Hot Shots On Air, as always. And tonight, hanging out with Peter Snow. He's the frontman of the GTHA-based, politically charged alt-rock group, The Soviet Influence. You can find Peter on Instagram, Facebook, Bandcamp, and Twitter under The Soviet Influence. And hey, Peter, thanks so much for jumping in here and talking to me.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, of course, anytime. I guess, like, just to kind of start everything off, how would you describe your sound and style?
Yeah, what do we sound like? We have an evolving sound. How many of the fans probably say that all the time? But we started out, like, in the early days, it was sort of more of, like, an arty sort of music. So it was, like, influenced by, like, you know, sort of early 2000s Radiohead and, like, you know, when they were doing all that weird stuff. Like, we weren't that weird, but we were pretty getting close to that. And, you know, someone once wrote that we were sort of like a cross between Radiohead and Arcade Fire. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting comparison. If you want to think about like big bands that people know, that's probably the most obvious sort of comparison. We've also been compared to like pretty diverse stuff. So some people think we're, you know, sort of tragically hip-like, which I think is mostly just the way that I sound. My singing is sort of off. A little bit like Gordami. But I, you know, that, so it's that kind of stuff. I don't know. But lately, like, so we have a new guitar. Well, not new. He's not new anymore. He feels new because of the pandemic, but we, before the pandemic, we had bought a new guitar player, and he is a bit more of like a, what would you call it? Sort of, not metal, but like, you know, that sort of like, you know, big licks kind of background. Like, he plays, he's a great guitar player. So it's added a little bit more edge, and I've been writing more music that's more edgy, and he brings in some stuff that's more edgy. So we've kind of gone a little bit more into the rock, you know, heavier rock sort of direction more recently. But, yeah, I know, but we're still doing all kinds of, I mean, we're always trying stuff and doing new things. So I think, you know, it's really hard to pin it down totally, because I feel like I say that, and then, you know, the next thing we do is, like, different.
Right. Yeah, of course. Always evolving and changing, you know, that's, it's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who are your biggest musical influences?
Yeah, so I already mentioned Radiohead. So I was, like, when OK Computer, like, was one of those albums that was like, oh, this is, like, something different. I had been really into, like 70s and 60s rock music, and then, you know, didn't really listen to modern music a lot at the time, so, like, late 90s or 2000s, and then sort of got hit with, like, oh, hey, look, it's this really cool-sounding thing, and then that sort of turned into other bands, you know, from different directions. So, like, the Talking Heads is a band that we like, and really, you know, I find a lot of sort of influence from. I was talking about the arty thing, for being sort of art, you know, sort of weird and different. There's a couple. I think, you know, I would say the other guys in the group, funny enough, Rush is an influence. Yeah, it's just, you know, I think we joke all the time about doing a Rush song, even though, like, we don't think we could pull it off.
Right.
I thought we should do it. We totally do a Rush song.
Yeah.
Progressive rock stuff. So, like, I was really big into Genesis and those sort of bands, like, Yes, those kind of things. So that comes into it. But then I think, like, the stuff we're writing now has a bit more of, like, it's veering towards more of, like, a stadium rock kind of thing. So, you know, getting into, like, you know, more modern sort of bands that are doing things. I guess there aren't. I mean, there are bands that are doing this, you know, but I feel like they kind of get pushed to the side a little bit more in popular music these days. So then I end up going back to my old influences. So like I mentioned Talking Heads, I think the Smiths have a bit of an influence on us. I think, you know, from the political side, which we'll probably talk more about, you know, like Rage Against the Machine, not so much from the musical side, we definitely don't sound like them, but I think cool stuff and like all the great sort of anti-flag, all those sort of bands that were, you know, anti-capitalist kind of bands.
Yeah.
I think those influence us from more of a lyrical and political standpoint, but musically, yeah, it's much more, yeah, like a lot of 80s bands, I don't think surprisingly, but that's definitely a huge influence on me.
Yeah.
It's sort of weird because I, you know, be honest with you, my biggest influence growing up as a musician was Matthew Good, the Matthew Good Band. But mm-hmm. I feel really weird about that now with all the things that went down a few months ago with him. And I'm like, always sort of, hesitant to talk about it just because, like, you know, I don't know how I feel about it all. I haven't listened to his music in months, so it's kind of like, eh. But definitely, like, if you listen to our stuff, you hear the influence because it's there. It's undeniable, good music when it was written. So, at that, yeah. And then, you know, I think stuff that isn't necessarily directly into the music, like I mentioned with the lyrical stuff, Bruce Coburn's another guy. We're actually going to be releasing the cover of If I Had a Rocket Launcher in a couple months.
Cool.
Yeah, because, you know, he's got that sort of political edge to him, but he's also, you know, he's an amazing musician. Like, guys, he's an incredible musician. We don't really sound at all like him, but you know, it does have its influence. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff, you know, and obviously the other guys bring their own influences and the things that they're into, and it's actually really cool being in a group of, like, four somewhat different, but also similar people. Like, we all have pretty different musical influences, but we all sort of also have similar ideas about songwriting and ideas about what we want to do as a band and all that. So it comes together really nicely because people bring in new ideas, and it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Do you remember what you listened to as a kid, and do those early influences have an impact on your current style?
Oh, yeah. So as a kid, when I was like a kid, my favorite musician in the world was Elvis Presley. And I was not born in 1960. I just loved him so much when I was little. And like growing up, I remember, so we used to go for car trips. Like my parents would take in long car trips. And we would listen, there were basically just two things we would listen to. We would either listen to Genesis's album, We Can't Dance, which is like one of the mid-80s or more pop albums. And then we would listen to Rod Stewart's Unplugged and Feud, which is like acoustic album he did of his song. So like, I always joke that my like earliest musical influences were like progressive, like pop progressive music and like acoustic ballad. And for a long time, I mostly wrote that kind of stuff. I don't know that it is as much anymore. Like, you know, I think, thematically, there's actually, funny enough, that that Genesis album does have a couple of like pretty political songs on it. So from like a content standpoint, and I think, you know, I used to write pretty long songs. Our first album has a couple of like, I think they're almost 6 minute songs on it, and the last album only, I think the longest was 4 minutes, so we really pared down what we're doing. So that was there for sure. And then the Rod Stewart stuff I don't think I'm really influenced by anymore. But it was, you know, it was there when I was growing up, it was around, so I, you know, I was listening to it. And like my mom was like a big, like she saw The Who at Bryan Tiller Stadium in Hamilton in like the 70s, you know, for like $5, and she had Pink Floyd there, and like she, you know, these were her people, you know, David Bowie, all those folks. So I definitely, you know, was around that kind of music growing up, and I don't think that stuff leaves me. Like, I think it's still with me. You know, maybe not directly, but certainly in terms of like what motivates me to write and to think about music in certain ways, maybe non-traditional ways. So I would definitely say like the stuff from when I was younger, it's in there. It's not, you know, necessarily at the forefront, but it definitely plays a role for sure.
Do you come from a musical family?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
So the yes part of that is both my parents played instruments when they were kids. So my dad played the drums, and my mom actually saved up to buy herself a violin so she could take violin lessons.
Nice.
But but my dad's mother sold his drum kit when he was like 18.
Yeah.
So he stopped playing, and my mom got she had a bunch of illnesses when she was in her like teens, so she spent a lot of time in the hospital. So she couldn't keep playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
She stopped. So they both kind of stopped, but they both liked music and there's a lot of music around.
Sure.
Other, like, I have cousins that play piano and stuff like that, but it was, it wasn't really like a big thing in terms of like for playing. I was sort of an odd one in that sense. And it's, I know, I tell you, I got into playing music, not through music, but through musical theater. So I started out doing theater when I was like 7 and got into musical theater, got into doing musicals, and then hit high school and was like, I should be in a band. And then I joined a band and I had to learn how to play bass because we didn't have a bass player. So that was interesting. And then I learned to play guitar, but it was sort of a sideways way into playing like rock and pop music. Like it was from this musical theater background, which I think actually I should have mentioned that as an influence, because I do think that theatrical element does, particularly now, play a role in what we're trying to do. So,
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. Do you remember when you had that first sort of like music aha moment, like when you heard a certain song or listened to an album and thought, wow, I want to create that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my friend gave me a tape. I mentioned OK Computer, the first 3 tracks.
Throwback.
On OK Computer, which is Airbag, Paranoid Android, and Subterranean Homesick Alien, I believe. I'm happy to be proven wrong that, but yeah, he gave me that. And I remember just like, and at that point, like I had no concept of like how bands worked or like, you know, like what all the different instruments were even, you know, but like, I just listened to that and I was like, this is the most incredible thing I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, I need to be making music. I need to be doing something like this.
Yeah.
And it's just so incredible and so different from anything I had heard before. At least, you know, from where I was coming from and, you know, I just was so not prepared for that sort of mind-altering moment of like, you need to go and do this. And I thought, well, you know, I should, you know, I know how to perform. I've been on stage for a long time. It's a thing that I do. I should totally be in a band. And I had a friend who I'm still friends with who was a guitar player. You know, he's actually a very good guitar player. And, you know, when we knew a guy, we went to school with a guy whose dad was in bands and like, he had a drum kit. So, you know, he knew how to kind of play the drums. So like, we should just walk it together and start a band. And we did, you know, and it was, then we had like our first practice and it was like terrible in the sense that we sounded horrible. I know there's still some tapes of that laying around because we had recorded some of it. It's awful. It's, you know, when you start your first band, you sound terrible, but you know, it was so exciting. It was like, oh yeah, we're going to do this now. And it's going to be a thing. And like, here I am many years later still doing it. It's kind of crazy to think actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you start singing first or playing guitar first? Because I believe you also play guitar, right?
Yeah. Well, I was our singer first. Yeah, okay. I was our singer in the band initially. And then, like I said, I shifted over to bass and some guitar because we just didn't. We had a really hard time getting people to commit to being in our groups. So,
sure.
Because we weren't playing the music that was popular at the time. We were doing our own thing. So I ended up doing different stuff. And then for a while, my friend, who was the guitar player, he was the main singer and I was the main singer again. And then, but I went back and forth. Being on whoever was like, honestly, whoever was having an easier time of singing and playing, I guess, and whoever sounded the best at the time, we had very different voices.
Yeah.
We still do. So, yeah, you know, but yeah, I started singing. You know, I was like, it's funny, I was one of those kids who like choir and like all that stuff until like I hit puberty and my voice changed. And then like I had to relearn how to sing, and it took me, honestly, probably took me like 8 or 9 years to like really figure it out. Like, how do I do this now? And like a lot of years of like, not singing very well.
Right.
To figure out, okay, how do I do this? You know,
yeah.
I still feel like it's, you know, of course, a work in progress forever, but.
Yeah. Do you play any other instruments?
So I pretend to, I can pretend, like, I can carry a beat on the drums. You know, it's nothing spectacular. Nobody would hire me to be in a band, but I can, and I can play some keyboard. I know a bit of piano. I did piano lessons for a few years as a kid, so I still have that, like, rudimentary knowledge, and I can, you know, do stuff, like, you know, I could do, like, most of the synth stuff and, like, even the string stuff on our album is all, you know, keyboard. Well, I can. I would never say, though, like, I'm a piano player, keyboardist, or anything like that. I love the sounds. But, yeah, guitar and bass, I can do that. I mean, I can do that. Yeah, and I can bang on the drums. Okay.
Yeah. When did you start creating music? And by chance, do you remember the first song that you wrote?
Okay, yeah. So absolutely, I remember the first song I wrote. So in grade 10, business administration class, 3 of us band together to start a band. So I'm like, all right, let's do that. How do you do that? Well, what do? You get together. So we got together in friend's basement practicing. And we started just sort of jamming around, you know, guitar, drums, and I was just singing stuff. And we wrote this really absurd song called Airman. And to this day, I don't really know what Airman was. Like, I came up with these lyrics, but I don't really know what it was supposed to be. It was just so weird. It was a lot of, like, sort of yell singing, but not like screaming, but, like, you know, just sort of like, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was called Airman. And we kept playing that song for probably the first year we were a band. It was, like, one song we had written. And then we wrote more songs, and then sort of Airman got lost. But then, funny enough, our drummer, he worked for a while doing recording and stuff. Actually, funny, our drummer is Rob Cozy, who's the guy that, he's one of the Festival of Friends organizers. So anyway, so he's still in the industry to an extent.
Yeah.
Anyway, he made a remix of it with, like, a dance beat.
Nice.
This is a really weird song. Then we did, like, a sequel, The Return of Airman. But we realized after we wrote that the riff was basically a ripoff of an Eagles song. I forget which Eagles song it was, but it was an Eagles song.
Yeah.
So then we're like, oh, I guess it sort of can't really use that.
Maybe not.
But yeah, so it was Airman. It was terrible. I've tried to resurrect it a couple times, and we tried to make a better version of it just for fun.
Yeah.
And I can't really take it anywhere because it's not very good.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the first good song I wrote, if I can talk about that,
sure,
was a song called 15 Floors, which my first year in university, I wrote it. And then when I came back, those of us who had been in this band together got together again, and we recorded, like, three songs, one from each of us. But that song was, you know, it was like an acoustic ballad, actually. And, you know, it was better. And, you know, writing has been a process of getting better for many years.
Yeah. For sure, yeah. When did you begin to look at music as something more than a hobby?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think I was in the back of my head, I thought, okay, I could maybe do something with this. But, like, I don't think, I honestly, like, if I'm going to be, like, objective about it, I don't think I was good enough until maybe, like, 3 or 4 years ago. Like,
sure.
I would say, like, I hadn't reached a point where I was going to write songs that were going to be good enough to actually do something with.
Yeah.
So, like, before that, I definitely, like, was trying, like, a little bit, you know, and doing stuff and had bands and we'd play shows and things. But I wouldn't say until, like, this project and, like, after this project had been going for a bit that I really felt like, okay, like, we actually have stuff worth saying. And then in the last, like, probably 18 months, it's been like, yes, absolutely, here's stuff that's actually really good music. Like, music that I'm really proud of and want to share. You know, that I think it has the quality that one should have if they're going to put their music into the world. So, yeah, I would say that's when it started to get a little bit more serious for me. And then with the guys in the band, I think that, you know, bringing them on board kind of bumped that a little bit more. And then we did some really, we've actually released a lot of music. We did some really good recordings. We got some good recordings over COVID. So, yeah, like, I think that was the point. Like, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was like, yeah, like 2018, maybe, when I was like writing for the album that we released in 2019. I was like, yeah, these songs are actually really good and really different. I did a bit of work with the drummer from the band OK Go, which is a pretty well-known U.S. band.
Mm-hmm.
He produced some stuff with me, and I was like, okay, yeah, if he thinks this is good, then maybe, you know, if he's giving me an honest appraisal thing, it's pretty good. Then, yeah, maybe I can accept that, and this might actually have some legs under it.
Yeah. Did you study music or take professional lessons?
I did. I did a minor in music at university, actually.
Nice.
I would never say that my music theory is good. My music theory is good when I'm studying it, and then as soon as I stop studying it, I forget most of the stuff that I knew.
Right, of course.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I've, like, memorized, like, the circle of fifths, or, like, how many times I've, like, you know, learned whatever. But, like, the stuff, like, I think it stays in my head, like, instinctually, so, like, I will be able to instinctually do stuff, but, like, to, like, sit down and be like, hey, that's what I'm doing. The only reason I think it's in there instinctually is because I do write songs that are a little bit off the wall, like, some of it have, like, three different key changes in them, and, like, polyrhythm, stuff like that, like, that I think I do didn't know the theory at some level, but from having learned it, but I don't, it doesn't stay at the front of my brain, it's not the way my brain works. So,
right.
Yeah, I did that. I did take singing lessons as a kid as well. And into my teen years, I never actually took guitar lessons. I just sort of, other than, like, YouTube guitar lessons, most of that was just learning from friends and, like, trial and error, and practicing a lot, which, you know, I still wouldn't consider myself a great guitar player compared to most of the guitar players that I know, including the other one in our band who's quite a lot better than me. But you know, I would, that's sort of my training background. It's mostly just a minor in, that I did in university on top of, you know, my degree.
Yeah. Well, what do you think was the most important lesson that you took away from your time studying?
That's a fantastic question. And I think the thing for me was, like, music doesn't have to be rigid. If you sit inside this sort of pop world, or even, like, hip-hop and, like, other modern forms of music, like, you can feel like you're stuck or constrained in a certain mindset. You know, even with, like, you know, our bass player got a bit of a jazz background. Like, they have a certain way of thinking and a certain mindset and a certain perspective on how music is. And I think when you look at the history of, like, of all this, like, this, I mean, at one level, the sort of accent for two, but another level, just, like, people expressing themselves in various ways, right? You know, popular music has always been, like, very common and very widespread. People would sing, like, sound around, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the thing for me was that, you know, letting yourself feel open to new ideas and to do different things, which has actually been sort of the opposite lesson you get when you think of the music industry, which is that these are the way things are done. It's how you play a song that people are going to, like, play on the radio and people are going to notice. Like, you know, you can do this and this and this. And like, we worked briefly with a label, and that was basically what we said about songs. Like, okay, do this and that and this and this, and you're done. That's the song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
mm-hmm.
like, okay, which is fine. But, you know, our probably been like that. Like, we have some that are very sort of, you know, structure-wise, non-traditional. There's one song, This Is the News, that has one chorus in the middle of the song, and that's it. It never repeats, which seems weird for a chorus, but it's just sort of how the song works. So, yeah, it's definitely, like, you know, the idea that you can just do whatever. You know, if it sounds interesting, if you like it, and do more of it, or, you know, put it out there and just see what happens with it, you know. And I think that's been an important lesson, is that there's such a variety of ways of doing things when it can feel like I think if I had just focused on, like, you know, learning from the bands that I really liked and following sort of that path, I wouldn't have been able to, like, push limits in any way. Not that we're some great metal band, but, you know, here and there, pushing on the edges of things, I think, you know, to not be afraid of that.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. How did your family and friends react to you pursuing music?
You know, they've been pretty supportive overall, which is important, because otherwise you can't do this sort of thing in reasonable way.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been pretty good about it. I mean, my parents, like, were like, do whatever you want, live your life. You know, do what you want. Friends have always been great and very supportive for the most part. You know, it's funny, relationships has been an interesting one. So, my wife, now, I got married, now I'm always great. She's very supportive. But, like, I've been in relationships, people are like, oh, the music thing is stupid, why are you doing that? Like, you know, it's not good enough. And I dated someone in one of my bands once, which was not a good idea, but it happened.
Yeah.
You know, although funny enough, the other two people in the band also dated, and they got married and are still married to this day, so it's sort of a weird band. Anyway, but they've been great. Anyway, it actually is funny enough. So I have children. My children are our biggest fans of our band. So my eldest son, he's only 7. He's been to every show we've done except for the one he couldn't go to because it was in a old age place.
Yeah.
So he's 12. You know, we did a summer. We filmed a show in our backyard, and he sat just off camera the entire time watching because he was so into it. Like, literally 5 feet away from me the entire time. He came over at one point to see what songs we were going to play next, and then he critiqued our set list.
Aww.
In the middle of the show, he's like, you know, don't play that song, play this other song. So that was fun. But so that's been great, because that's actually really motivating, right? Like, having people think about, even if it's just, I mean, that's true, you know, he's 7, he doesn't know much about at his point, like, not heard that, you know, but, you know, he loves it, and just that gives me, like, just that little bit of extra kick to, like, keep trying and not stop.
For sure.
It's easy to do. It, like, forget it. Am I gonna do it anymore?
Yeah.
Especially with the pandemic. The pandemic was, like, the perfect excuse to be like, you know what? There's no shows anymore. You know, no one's listening to that much. Like, streaming's not doing anything. You're not going anywhere. So just stop. But we didn't. We actually accelerated our efforts during the pandemic. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are the major ways your music has changed since you first started writing?
Yeah. I think, confidence has been big. So I think in the early days when I was writing songs, I was trying really hard to be different. Like, I didn't want to write, you know, songs that were, like, typical. I've always had this impulse to be different. Like, it's just in me to not, just to be weird, I guess. I get uncomfortable when I'm too much, like, what people expect, which right. I don't know why that is. I don't necessarily think it's a good thing, but it's certainly how I've been most of my life. So I always try to write songs that are different and on different topics and things that people are writing about and things like that. And I don't know, but I didn't have really the confidence to do it effectively. But I think over time, like by doing it more and practicing more, I gained that confidence that I can do the things I want to do. So that actually helped push me in different directions. I think the other thing that changed a lot in terms of writing songs is also in the realm of confidence is being more comfortable with my talent, my ability. So like being able to sing well, being able to play guitar well, being able to do things that in the past I wouldn't have tried. So it's really about trying things, doing more things, pushing more. And then the last thing is about like feeling more comfortable pushing on the topics we're singing, like I'm writing about. So, you know, I went back to the first Soviet Influence album. It had some really political stuff on it, but it was sort of like hidden in sort of vague language. Like, some stuff that was a little bit explicitly calling stuff out, but like always sort of like, you know, held back. Now, like, I stopped holding back for the most part, to the point of getting more explicit and at times more aggressive. So that's been a big change. It's like just being so much like, I'm going to do this. And part of the reason is the band. Like, the guys that I play with are very much like, yes, go for it, do it. The other thing has been the response. So, like, when people tell you that they appreciate what you're doing, it makes you want to keep doing what you're doing, keep pushing directions that you're going. So that's been really helpful in my songwriting, actually, that people are, like, responding to it and being like, yeah, like, this is cool. Like, you should do more of this. Yeah. That makes me want to do more of it and want to do different things. And, of course, like, influences have changed, right? So, like, you know, I'm listening to different music now than I used to listen to when I started out writing and trying to do different things when I started. And also the people I play with over the years have had a huge impact on. Because I've played with a lot of different musicians, and it's been really important to see those different perspectives and to hear those different ideas and to let that kind of percolate and push me in directions I wouldn't have gone otherwise.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Did you grow up in the GTA? And if so, which area?
Yeah, I grew up in Hamilton.
Hamilton
nice. Mountain. Yeah, I was from Hamilton Mountain. So I grew up Hamilton Mountain, went to school there at the university, then I went off to Waterloo for my undergrad. But yeah, I know Hamilton was my city for many, many years. Yeah.
Beautiful. So where are you currently living right now?
So now I live in Halton Hills, which is sort of this little community north of Milton.
Yeah.
Yeah, East of Guelph, like sort of well, pretty rural where I am. Just a function of, you know, growing up, getting married, moving to the place where my wife grew up. It's been interesting because there's really no music scene to speak of here.
Yeah.
Like it's there are bars, people play them. It's mostly like blues bands and cover bands and stuff. So,
totally.
You know, we have played some gigs around here, but a lot of other bands here. So, like, we've had to sort of try to build our connections in other communities. I tried to stay connected to Hamilton. So, you know, so being isolated up here doesn't help with that, but, you know, it does help with, you know, inspiration. And it gives us a place we've been able to play outside and practice outside because there's not a lot of people around here, so we could actually do a lot outside and, during the pandemic when, you know, there were no rehearsal spaces to use and we couldn't practice indoors. So that's been really helpful in that sense.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think is special about Hamilton's music scene?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, Hamilton's music scene is such a funny thing, because I've been around it for a long time. And, like, in the old days, what I remember is it being, like, pretty fractured between, you know, there were in and out people. I'm sure it's still like this. I don't see this as much. But the thing I think about now is that, you know, there's a lot of people doing a lot of different things, but they all seem to, like, know each other and get along really well.
For sure.
So, you know, there's different bands that are, there's country, you know, creative people. There's people doing, like, noise rock. There's people doing, like, you know, shoegaze. There's people doing, you know, more pop punk. And, like, but, like, all these people know each other because it's a small kid, and they seem to support each other pretty well. Like, that's what I have seen.
Yeah.
And even supporting, like, me, I'm not in Hamilton anymore. I'm from there, but it's not my scene anymore. they've been very supportive of us, mm-hmm. You know, sort of being part of that scene, even though it's not really, like, we're not technically from the city anymore. So that's been really cool. I like that aspect of it. I think, you know, I'm excited to see what happens when things reopen and, you know, the venues can really, really start hosting things again. I know some have started, but, like, you know, there's only so much you can do with the restrictions and everything that's going on, but, you know, people can start playing in the city again, the festivals start happening again, and, you know, and the scene starts happening again. I think it's going to be really, really good to kind of see where that goes, you know, and it's such a weird city. Like, I don't, having grown up there, mm-hmm. I don't know if you grew up there, but, like, having grown up there through to now, like, with the gentrification that's happened, to see it yeah. change so dramatically in just mm-hmm. a decade, mm-hmm. wild. Yeah. It's wild to think that the places are, you know, when I was younger and we would, like, going downtown was, like, this thing you would do because it's dangerous. I'm like, oh, downtown, like, there's, you know, you go to the record shops, but, like, everything else is just sketchy. Yeah. And now it's, like, you know, there's, like, fancy restaurants in the corner, and, like, people are, you know, like, everything's a craft beer place. Like, you know, like, it's just, like, different vibe.
Yeah.
It seems to be, like, for people, generally more positive, and you know, I mean, the city's problems aside, the music scene has blossomed a bit. Like, even I think back to when there were three places you could play in the city, you know, and until the pandemic, it had grown quite a bit from that, like, a lot more opportunities and, you know, just a lot more interest in the music scene than maybe there was when I was first a part of it back in high school.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't grow up here, but I came here for college, and I've just, you know, really enjoyed it. I've liked the area so much that I stayed, so...
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Who are some local talented artists that you think deserve more spotlight?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
So, speaking of Hamilton, Bayser Revolt, and I'm pretty sure you know.
Yeah.
They just did a live stream on Friday night. Watch that. That was cool.
Yeah.
Love that band.
I love them too.
Nam actually came and recorded our live show that we did.
Okay.
They did the music for us. It was fantastic with all the recording. That was great, you know. Yeah, and yeah, Chris is great. They're all great. So that's a band, like, I think, I know they're already sort of known, but I feel like they could be way more well-known and should be more well-known than they are.
Sure.
A band from Toronto that we're friends sort of with is Sky Wallace. She's also kind of, people know her, I guess, a bit. She's going on tour this year with somebody. Who's she going on tour with? I forget. Anyway, she's going on tour. But she's, you know, she's cool. She's, like, she's more rock than we are, I think. Like, she's okay. Like how I want to be as. She's just so awesome. So she's cool. It's true. Like dark wave music. Like, I don't know if you know Concavity or Concavity. Yeah, they're like a dark wave sort of band from Hamilton. They play like the synth heavy baritone guitar. Like, cool. I love them. I think they're great. I love cool. everything they've done. Mm-hmm. They're one of my favorite little bands. Let's see, who else do I like? Oh, Friday Empire. I should totally prop them up. They came and did a compilation release concert. They came and played Hit My House 2. Really cool, like, two music scene, like, music scene grad guys, super talented guys.
Yeah.
From Kisher. But they're really good on TikTok and social media and stuff, the things that we're, as a band, not very good at, but they're, like, really good at that. Mm-hmm. Do really cool stuff. And they've been playing a lot. Like, they do a duo thing, so they've been playing a lot lately. But check them out. They're cool. Those would be the ones that immediately come to mind. There's just so many good bands, but, like, you go out. I mean, if we could go out, you'd be able to, like, see a good show, like, every night.
Yeah.
There's just so many bands. Like, we did a compilation for the St. Toronto Music Venues thing, and, like, I didn't know most of the bands that were on it, but I'm like, these are all great bands. Like, it's just, like, there were, like, 20 songs, all good bands. And, like, you know, it's amazing, the talent that's out there right now.
Who's a dream collaborator of yours, and, like, go big on this one? Like, choose anyone.
I can go big. That's a good question. I just have to think about it, because a lot of people that I love to do music with, so many people. Yeah. And I'm looking at my epic question right now.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's in my room. I'm looking at my American collection. You know who I'd want to work with is Kevin Drew from Broken Social.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he does some cool stuff. He'd be cool. That's not super big. You know, they're only so big. My person that we could never in a million years with, I would love to work with, if I could be, probably Johnny Greenwood, the guitar player from Radiohead. Mm-hmm. He's done, like, a whole bunch of, like, album tracks and stuff.
Yeah.
I heard this story once about, what band was it? I think it was R.E.M. Yeah, it was R.E.M. And they had one of the members of Pink Floyd do, like, string arrangements on one of their albums.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't very big at the time. They were, like, getting big, but not, like, they weren't, like, Losing My Religion big. But just, like, how cool it was to have someone that amazing, like, who you admired that much, do something for your music
mm-hmm.
and, like, be really complimentary about it. Like, I think that would just, I would die. Like, I would just, like,
yeah.
I would faint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally, yeah. And who's a local artist that you love to collab with on something?
Yeah, oh, good question. What I want to work with locally. Yeah, well, I mentioned Bass Revolver. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I love their music.
Mm-hmm.
We might be a little too, which is interesting. Although, it'd be great. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
I would love to do something, you know, the OBGMs?
Yeah.
They just got shortlisted for the Polaris Prize. They're like a punk band from Toronto.
Yeah.
They're really cool. I would love to work with them. Like, they're way more punk than we could ever be, but, like, just to get that raw energy that they, like, they write great songs, but they also have this, like, energy that, like, I don't think we can do, but I think, like, if we could bring some of that into our record, oh, that'd be so good.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many bands. I would love to, like, I'm just like, if you're cool and you write the music, like, let's work together. I'd love to do it.
Totally. 100%. So we're going to hit pause on this conversation for a quick second and play everyone a single from the Soviet Influence. We actually have an exclusive sneak peek here for y'all. So Catastrophe is a track set to be released next month about going through the ups and downs of life with your partner. I'm anxious. You're depressed. My life is such an awful mess. It's a madness, I must confess. Clean living, bodies at ease. Empty skies of pattern of trees. An illusion. anyone just tuning in, this is Hot Shots on Air, and tonight I'm speaking with GTA-based alt-rocker Peter Snow of the Soviet Influence. So your 2021 album, titled Socialism and Introduction, was released earlier this year. Can you go over some of the themes on that album?
So that album, Socialism and Introduction, obviously the name implies it's socialism, pretty political. And so we wanted to, like, be pretty clear that, like, we have a certain perspective, but also that perspective comes with a message of hope. So, like, you know, it's one thing to be like, oh, everything is terrible and, you know, everything is terrible. It's another thing that everything is terrible and we think there's opportunities for things to be different. Mm-hmm. To me, that version is the version we want to portray. Yeah. The other one just sounds like kind of like we're complaining,
yeah,
but we're not really offering any perspective. We're not really, you know, helping move the needle in any direction.
Sure.
So we're sort of just being nihilists at that point, which I don't think we want to be. We want to be like, things can change and here's how you do it, to a point. Mm-hmm. Or look for ways to do it. And so there's little bits and pieces you can kind of hear of, like, oh yeah, that's a theme from the pandemic. So, like, for example, there's a song called Tomorrow is the Day, and it, like, talks about, like, you know, the world outside is changing, and, you know, are you going to be able to bring in the things that I need to get through this? I wrote that, like, in the first 3 weeks of the pandemic when people were, like, holding toilet paper and stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, although it's not about that couldn't help but be part of it, I guess, just because that's what was on my mind.
Yeah.
But as things moved on and I wrote more songs, it became more and more about the very specific issues that we have. So things like income inequality and housing and, you know, workers' rights, that kind of stuff. And also about how hard political change is. So, mm-hmm. you know, about like the song, The Running Song, which is the second song there, and is also, I think, the first single we released. It's a song that's like, hey, you're going to push up against, you know, the power is going to push back, and you may need to, you know, get away.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a song about running away but still, like, wanting to fight, not wanting to give up, even though that's what's happening. You know, and I think the whole album has a bit of that in it. It's a lot of, like, hopeful stuff, a lot of, like, we can do this, but also a lot of, like, here's what's actually happening. Because, you know, I think people ignore a lot of things just because it's easier to ignore them. You know, like, if you're relatively comfortable, it's pretty easy to just be like, well, you know, so what if, like, it's getting hotter, or, you know, the earth's changing, or, you know, people are dying, or, you know, people are being oppressed. Like, you know, my life's okay. So generally, you know, that's a human way to think, you know. I'm okay, and people around me are okay, so why would I worry about other stuff? We kind of want to push on that a bit. And then there's also a little bit of that desperation in there. So Oh Not Tonight, which is, I think, one of the, probably the best, if not the second best song on that record, is about, like, when you hit rock bottom and you're like, I can't get through this. I'm just not going to make it. It's too much to deal with. Which is the feeling, I think, anyway, the final conclusion is there's a lot that happens mm-hmm. after that, you know, that you come through. So yeah, those are some of the main things on there.
Yeah. Who did you work with to record and produce the project?
Yeah. So that album was produced by David Partridge out of Helm Recordings.
Mm-hmm.
He was a musician. He played in a lot of bands in the 90s. It was in the same circle as Alexis on Fire.
Mm.
Like, he played, like, on the big bills with them when they were starting out, and they were his friends, or I don't know, they knew each other. Mm. Anyway, but he opened a studio at one point. It was in Milton, and then moved, that's where I met him, and then he moved up north now, works up north, but in the middle of the pandemic, when everything shut down, his studio shut down, so he had some time on his hands, so I've sent him, like, our stuff that we're working on. And he would, like, add stuff, you know, mix it, send it back.
Yeah.
So pretty much all of our music since 2018 has been produced by him, with the exception of the song that you just played. That was produced by a guy in England. But one thing about our band, which I always like to mention, is that we're really focused on, like, working with good people.
Yeah.
Like, we will, you know, we want to, you know, everyone in the band, we all like each other. We all get along really well. Everyone, you know, no one has an ego, whatever. We don't like to work with people we don't like because we want to have fun, right? Like,
sure.
We're having a good time, you know? And we would rather sacrifice some level of success to enjoy ourselves.
Cool, yeah. How was the reaction to, like, fans and family when you dropped it? And then how did you go about marketing it as an indie artist?
Yeah, good question. People liked it. People really liked the song.
Mm-hmm.
We, like, our biggest streams song is on there, which was Oh Not Tonight. Got, like, 2,000 streams, which is not a lot for a lot of bands, but it's a lot for us.
Sure.
So it's a good start. I think I really like that. I think people really responded pretty well. People who know us and have heard our other music are like, yeah, these songs are like a level up from the old ones.
Cool.
Like I have a friend who was released because I like to get their opinion. And yeah, they were all like very positive about these songs. It was either like, to like that next step we've been trying to make as songwriters. So that was good. Yeah, the marketing side, it's so tricky, right? Because, you know, on the one hand, like, to do it like the professional way is expensive. To do it the DIY way is consuming. So we did a lot of it, but very time consuming. Good, like, good connections. Oh Not Tonight got a showcase on The Edge, which was cool. Like, I was like, hey, you know?
Yeah.
They played it, so that's cool, you know. We'll take that. The other songs, I think, you know, we had a couple that were on like a video thing that was shot at Mills Hardware, which was cool. We're happy with that. But yeah, you know, the marketing thing's tough because I heard somewhere that like, and you would know this because you do, like, you write about music, like people like you get like hundreds of emails, right? Like tons of people reach out to you.
A lot.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And so it's hard to break through that.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that's been successful for us, I think, breaking through a little bit is the, like, honestly, not the music, it's the message.
For
people,
sure.
You know, there are people that resonate with our message, both in the industry and outside the industry, and they tend to give us more attention.
Sure.
Because they'll be like, you know, oh, I'm really into this, all this stuff you're talking about. So, you know. So it's almost beside the point that we're a band. It's like, oh, what are you talking about? You know, what's your message?
Mm-hmm.
So that's been helpful and has gotten us a little bit more attention. And for that reason, it just happens to be what we are. And if that were so great, I honestly thought it would go the other way. I thought we'd get ignored more because of our message, but it seems to be that we're not. So that's good.
Well, that's good, yeah.
But yeah, like, it's a lot of emailing people, trying to, like, talk and meet people. You know, like, we do shows, and when we do a show, like, we try to connect with people that are there. We actually were lucky enough, not that this was a huge thing, but at our very first gig ever, the local paper where I live, which is a very small paper, the guy who writes for them was there, and he was like, he wrote about us in their paper and offered us a gig at this person, which was cool, and like, we built on that. College radio stations have been huge for us.
Cool.
There's a few that have been like super supportive of our music, and they play our music like right away. I've interviewed other shows. We, you know, because of what we're doing. The compilation, we did a compilation recently, and we did like a release thing, and like three different radio stations played it. Like three different college stations played it. Some of them played it like three or four times, which is great, just, you know, help promote what we're doing. So that was really cool. So that's been good. And there's a few like blogs and stuff that like us, but, you know, it's tough because there's just so much music, right? So you're up against just a sea of good stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to kind of stand out unless you have something that's really, like, we think our songs are great,
yeah.
But there's also a lot of other great songs.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm not going to be like, there aren't a lot of other great musicians, but totally are. So,
totally.
Yeah, it's tough, right? And the big thing right now, honestly, in the promotion side of things, and you probably heard this from other people, is the lack of being able to perform anywhere is huge, right?
Yeah.
How do you build a fan base, right? You don't build a local fan base through, like, YouTube, Spotify. You build it either social media, if you're lucky, and that's really hard to do, or you most likely build that you're playing gigs, having people hear you and like where they hear, you know, but we just haven't had, there just aren't the opportunities that there used to be, you know, like, and even the ones like right now, the opportunities that are out there are mostly not for bands like us, right? They're for bands that are like acoustic bands or like folk bands, like, you know, two people on a patio, like that's what you can get right now. Not a lot of people are signing up for like drums to guitars. In the way that they used to. And even those are committed to like, oh, 25 people, 50 people, which is a big audience for us right now. That's a fine size audience. We'll take that. But like, you're just not going to get, you know, there's too few opportunities like that to even get those. So yeah, it's tough right now for sure.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope your audience took, but also takes away for people who haven't listened yet, away from this album?
I hope the hope comes through.
Yeah.
Like, I hope the idea of like, hey, you can do something.
Yeah.
Go and do something. You know, try and be active. Try and
go
be
and
involved.
Do it.
Yeah, like, don't just resign yourself to being sad, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, like, I think in the 90s and 2000s, like, we were involved in a lot of stuff. Like, we all kind of did some things, and, you know, it was different back then. You didn't have social media to, like, post about stuff. You would just sort of have to hear about it. mostly. But, you know, we're involved. But, like, now, like, there's so many opportunities to get involved in things, be engaged and show up to stuff and just have your voice be heard, you know, and to be a part of the conversation. And I think, you know, that's kind of what we want to encourage people to do, is be part of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. So you're quite outspoken online when it comes to social and political movements, you know, expressing your support for communities like the LGBTQ, which I believe you're also identify as a part of, as well as Black Lives Matter and, you know, so forth. Do you believe that as an entertainer, you have a responsibility to speak up?
I think so. I mean, I think the thing for me, right, like, I can't not speak up. Like, it's part of me as a person, you know.
Yeah.
It's just always, like, for a long time, this has been part of my life, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have to. But I think, like, here's the thing. Like, I remember I was talking about that history of music thing. And, like, the history of music it does have this subversive history, right, of, like, being used as a tool to subvert power structure. You know, you think about the way it's been used in marginalized communities to carry on stories, to carry on messages, to carry on ideas, you know. And even then, you know, you go to mainstream music, there's been a thread of political themes in music, you know, going back to the earliest days of sort of pop music. And, you know, so it's been part of it. And I think, you know, like, I don't blame bands that just want to sing about, like, getting dumped and, like, falling in love. And, like, you know, like, it's fine if that's what you want to do. Like, I'm not going to get on someone for that. And
yeah,
obviously there's bands that have different politics than us. You know, and that's fine too. I mean, you know, I'll disagree with them, but that's, you know, their prerogative. But I do think, like, for me, and also the guys in the band, you know, we want to be outspoken because we think it's important. We think if we have any opportunity to share what we think and what the ideas we have with anybody, then we're going to do it. You know, and, you know, our platform, whether it's limited or whether it grows and becomes, you know, quite large, it's going to be the same thing, you know, because we want to share that message, you know. And it's really, you know, if we're not going to do that, then it feels like we're not participating in society, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, it's such a key part of our day-to-day lives, you know. A lot of people want to ignore that. And, like, and I'll be honest with you, you know, yes, I'm part of the LGBT community, but, you know, I'm a bi person in a straight-appearing relationship, right? So
yeah.
I'm married to a woman.
Yeah.
I don't have to stick my neck out for anything. I'm a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
I could just hold up. I got a job that pays the bills. Like, I don't have anything. Like, you know, if I want to be blissfully ignorant of everything, other than climate change, which I don't have much control over, like, there's not really, you know, I don't have to. But, you know, I recognize that, you know, marginalization is an insidious part of society, and, you know, so many people have been damaged by it, you know. And it's been interesting watching people wake up to it over the last few years as, like, more, like, BLM and sort of land back, the indigenous rights stuff, and this residential school stuff, which is shocking people for some reason.
Yeah.
When it's like, guys, none of this stuff, but, like, you know, it's not a secret.
Yeah.
Indigenous community about it.
Mm-hmm.
They've been talking about it for a while. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission was years ago now.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a few years since that. People are shocked. Like, all these bodies, isn't it? Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's frustrating. So that's the other, right? Frustrated. And what do I do with my emotions? I put them into music. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm frustrated about something, or I'm angry about something, I'm going to put it in music. So, to answer your question, I do think as much as they can. I mean, entertainers, especially musicians, generally speak for their feelings. You know, not all of them, but a lot of them do. And, you know, if you're engaged and involved in things, then you're going to think about that. I don't think you have to make every song about that. I think, you know, you can go the route of, like, a lot of bands that do, like, a couple of sort of political songs and then write a bunch of songs about, like, you know, whatever else they want to write about. That's fine too. That's cool. We're just not that band, right? Like, our two topics are politics or mental health. So I'll write songs about my own mental health struggles, or I'll write songs about politics and, like, social issues.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what would you want to work on in the future? What do you hope to get involved with?
Yeah. I mean, we've been thinking about, like, what's next, you know, as far as, like, social issues go, like, because we've done, like, we're involved in a land back compilation. We've been involved a bit in the Toronto Music Venue thing because we know that, you know, we need venues. We recently did our Toronto Prison Rights Project thing we were doing in BLM and everything. So we're always really thinking, okay, what's next in terms of, we've got a bunch of songs. We've got a schedule. We've got, like, five new songs coming out over the next 5 months, which is pretty awesome, along with cover songs we're going to pair them with. That's cool.
Yeah.
But whenever we do a release, well, how are we going to like tie this into our social justice? Do both. So I'm not sure. I mean, climate change is something we haven't done enough with, because it's an important issue to all of us at the band, but we haven't really spent a lot of time on it. And I think we need to, you know, there's an election going on right now, and it's been an issue, but I don't know that it's getting a lot of traction the way that it should. I think really, but honestly, the next big thing for us is it's probably stuff I mentioned, the homeless encampments and sort of the treatment of the people that are sort of, you know, completely pushed to the bottom of society and dehumanized. It's kind of like a lot of what we're doing with the prisoners project, and we actually have more work to do around that, or things we want to do with that. But, you know, sort of looking at these people that have a voice and don't have answers in things, and helping to elevate their voices up to that level. You know, we don't want to speak for these people. We want to try and amplify them as much as we can. And so if you look at our social media, you know, it's mostly not posts about our music, mostly posts about other stuff.
Yeah.
Which, you know, from a marketing standpoint, not a great strategy, but from a, like, what we believe in standpoint, it is exactly what we're doing. Like, we'll mention our stuff, but we mostly want to focus on, like, different things we care about. And here's a different way to think about it and different things to look at.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What can we look forward to seeing from you?
Well, like I said, you can look forward to seeing four new songs. I say four new songs because we have four, like, new, like, Sobeys influenced style songs. We're also hilariously writing a Christmas song, which is, in our way, it's a political Christmas song. About workers' rights and Christmas.
Cool.
And that's going to be cool. I've never released a Christmas song before because I never really wanted to, like, you know, do a version of Jingle Bells or something. So this is going to be fun. But yeah, we're going to be releasing these five songs over the next 1 month or 5 months. And with that, there's also going to be an associate cover song. So we released Guns of Bricks, which is the class song, in the spring. And, like, it's our second most streamed track, which makes sense. It's a cover.
Yeah.
People really like it. So let's do more covers. People love covers, and we like doing covers. They're all going to be sort of themed around similar topics to the things we normally write about. I think I mentioned we're doing If I Had a Rock Launcher, which is a very political song. And there's shows with Pipes Festival coming out. In terms of shows, we don't actually have anything booked at the moment. We're currently working with some other bands trying to figure out how we can make shows work. It's so confusing, right, with, like, numbers are going up again, and, like, we're all sort of just waiting. School's going to open up on Tuesday, and, like, are they going to shut down again?
Yeah.
So it's really, like, everything's, like, tentative, and, like, do we want to, like, go ahead and try and book this, or do we want to just wait and see what happens and then decide?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's complicated like that, but
yeah.
We should have, like, we're dying, like, we're practicing regularly, we're dying to play, because we still play for people.
So. Everyone is, yeah.
Hopefully that happens soon. Besides that, yeah, like, expect a lot of social media posts about stuff that are important to things that we care about. Another thing I should mention. So we did that live performance for Toronto Prison Rights Project. That's recorded. We're going to release the whole thing at some point just as a standalone show.
Beautiful.
So that's going to be cool. I don't know when that's going to be yet. We haven't do that. So probably I would imagine in 2022 just because we have all these other things going on. But so that's going to be a thing too. So yeah, that's I guess it for us right now.
Awesome. Well, you guys can keep an eye on that and more on Instagram, Facebook, Bandcamp, and Twitter under the Soviet Influence. And thanks so much for joining me, Peter. This is great.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm really glad I could come on and talk to you.
Yeah, anytime. So we're going to wrap up this episode with another single from the Soviet Influence. Put You Up is a single from earlier this year about glamorizing the rich and powerful.
Hey guys, this is Peter Stone from the Soviet Influence, and you're listening to Hot Shots on Air on 101.5 The Hawk. Let it remind you.